Hi, this is David McQueen, and welcome to the David McQueen Podcast. In today's episode, I get to talk with Sophie Devonshire, the CEO of the Marketing Society and the author of Superfast and Love Work, a fitting conversation to wrap up this series around inclusive leadership.
So really good to have you here with me today, Sophie. My first question, for you today. don't look so anxious. It's a really easy one. My first question is, what did you have for breakfast?
So I love breakfast. I'm such a morning person, and I think breakfast is really important. And this morning I had something quite different, actually. So that's it's a good day to be asking me. I had a grilled halloumi salad for breakfast, which is unusual, I know. But I love a bit of protein in the morning. I like to sit with my coffee and some kind of breakfast. It's normally egg-based. But there was some halloumi. I'm in Istanbul at the moment, and there's some halloumi in the fridge. And I thought that would make an excellent breakfast. And I was right.
I love that. I had brioche, right? Ooh. I've got this thing about brioche at the moment, the little rolls. They're too buttery, but elk grilled halloumi. Okay, you give me a really good idea there. I like that. So interesting, if I can, a lot of my guests on here don't really have breakfast. So you're one of the few that does. A lot of people, either intermittent fasting or doing something other than they don't have it until later. So glad to find a breakfast person. Good. Right. So, as you know, with the Brave Leadership podcast, my main aim is to just try to talk to leaders like yourself, just to find out what your journey is, just so that other people can learn from them. And I guess my first question to you is how did you get into your own leadership journey?
So where did it all start?
And where did you first kind of like learn? If you reflect back on it, you go, oh, there was a kind of first sign that I could be a leader, or there's somebody else I saw that I modeled it on.
So I think it's a great question. It's thinking about the moments, the inflection points that made a difference. So I had a bit of a squiggly career, to use Helen and Sarah's term, but it started out fairly conventionally in that I fell into marketing and brand management and fell in love with it when I was a graduate trainee joining Procter & Gamble. Mm-hmm. And that's where the leadership journey starts, because there is something about the way in which they recruit people that indicates that there's something about you in the first place. So there's a confidence that when you join a graduate scheme like that, where everybody is promoted from within, there's a confidence that gives you. But I think also I was so inspired from day one with the leader, as ever. It's leadership is infectious, almost positive leadership, and it's the people around you. And the reason I ended up joining Procter & Gamble in the first place was because I went for interview practice. They didn't deduplicate their database, and they focused on people who were actively involved in societies at university, and they sent letters to anyone who's a president or a secretary of a society. And I was involved in so many, so I got all these letters and thought, oh, these people want me, I might as well go for interview practice. Not sure I'm interested, but I'll go for interview practice. And the reason I then took that forward was because the leaders who were interviewing me at that stage, one of whom is still a good friend and a very inspirational leader, the way they talked about business, the way they talked about the culture at P&G was so inspiring, so interesting, that it made me want to be part of it. So one of those people who interviewed me was Gary Coombe, who is now global CEO for Gillette, who I've stayed in contact with and was a boss of mine for years as well. And people like that, the way in which they treat other people inspires you to believe you can lead rather than just manage. So that was sort of where it all started. And then I think there's probably some other moments where I realized that actually there was more to be done. That was the start of it.
Fascinating. fabulous. I love that. I love that. And I actually think that's quite rare that somebody like yourself is still in touch with somebody from that part of your journey. That's so it's obviously a really, really good impact. So would I be safe to say that if I was to ask you a question about role models in terms of leadership, is he one or do you have many, many who are actual role models for you?
I'm so lucky in what I've done in that there are role models. As ever, there are also, what's the opposite? You sort of, you need people who you know you don't want to be like as well.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
The
antidote to a role model. I've got to think of a word for that. The antonym for a role model. I'll do that.
Because there are a couple of those too. But yeah, no, he definitely would be one. And there's been a number across the years. But of course, on top of that, because of the writing I've done and the work I've done as a consultant working with leaders for a number of years, that means I've come across, interviewed, research, spent time with some very inspirational leaders as well. So for my first book, Superfast, I spoke to 100 different leaders across the world.
Yes.
All completely different personalities, running completely different businesses. Mm-hmm. And that was such an amazing gift,
both
for the book, but also for my own inspiration. So there are one or two people in there that certainly would be incredibly memorable. Do you want me to talk about?
Go for it.
So of course, the people who've really inspired across the years, definitely people from Procter & Gamble. So Gary is a great example of someone who, you know, seen his leadership journey and how he's changed across the years, but is a real model for inclusive leadership, actually, which I know is something we want to talk about today.
Yeah.
And he's taken on himself to really be a change maker around that. Paul Polman, who was a boss of mine for a while, but also contributed a huge amount to Superfast and my thinking about leadership. His approach to leadership and the way in which he's been a role model continues to be an inspiration. Mm-hmm. Then there's all the Superfast founder entrepreneurs who have helped me and inspired me across the years. And I've been an entrepreneur. I've gone through that, set up my own e-commerce business and sold it. I don't think that that's for me for the long term, but what I've really enjoyed is working with a number of people who are founders and entrepreneurs. And it's always really helpful, I think, to be able to take the inspiration from startups and scale-ups and the kind of entrepreneurial thinking and help those who are working inside bigger organizations or slower organizations to cross-fertilize that. So I think Greg Jackson, who's the founder of Octopus Energy, is a huge inspiration for me in terms of leadership and a role model. And people like Jose Neves, who founded Farfetch as well. What they have in common is I'm really inspired by people who make things happen fast, but who put together a commercial and technological understanding with a real human understanding, and fundamentally who are decent people. Yeah. So, you know, personal purpose is all about how can you work with good leaders to do great things, and taking people who are actually decent, courteous people who operate with grace as well as pace. And those are the ones that inspire me and the ones I want to spend time with.
Love that. So for the record, for people listening, Sophie and I are friends. Okay, so I'm just going to just make that very clear now. And we've had lots of conversations around, we're part of a mastermind group who shall not be named publicly, right? But, you know, we have some really good conversations around perspectives. And I guess for outside of that group and in this open space for the purpose of the podcast, I'm really curious as to what good leadership looks like for you. And before you answer that, the context with which I answer that question, I wrote an article quite recently about role models being overrated. I like them, but sometimes I think they're overrated because people think when they see role models that they can't make mistakes, they don't screw up. You can swear on my podcast, by the way, I'm just thinking, you know, they don't fuck up, they don't make mistakes or what have you. And sometimes they can be, they have this super ideal of what good leadership looks like. So in that context, and now that I've said that with the article and all the rest of it, and the conversations we've had, I'm really curious as to what good leadership looks like for you. What are the things that really stand out?
Oh, it's so interesting. And I really enjoy the conversations we have already had around this sort of topic. And I think it's important to keep conversations going about leadership, because it is so complicated, because ultimately we are always dealing with fallible human people. And understanding that when you're a leader yourself, and accepting that you will make mistakes, and it's not just about the entrepreneurial, hey, let's all fail fast. It's just a genuine, people will make mistakes, I think is really important. So I want to address a few points in what you said there. One is, yes, the danger of role models, the danger that actually when you're trying to be a leader, you think, I'm not as good as that person, or I'm not like that person. Mm-hmm. I think that's incredibly challenging, because often I like to channel a piece of people who've inspired me and use that to help me. But it's so important to do it in your own way, and to do it around your own strengths, because, you know, I'm not like some of the founders that inspire me. I'm not, you know, I don't have some of the strengths that Paul Volman has, or and he would do things in a different way. And understanding that role models should be the spark that ignites you and helps you believe what's possible, and also it acts as acceleration, right? The stories of others helps you accelerate working out your own story. Yeah. Yeah. So what does a good leader look like? I think this is really important. And one of the things I talk about quite a lot when I'm running sessions for people or doing keynote sessions around leadership is this idea of 21st century leadership, that things have shifted, and that the most impressive leaders right now really understand that we've moved away from command and control. If you want to be a pace setter as a leader, you cannot any longer, as the fairground ride people used to say, scream if you want to go faster, right? You can't scream at people. You can't command and control. You have to trust and inspire, which is a whole different way of dealing with things. You can't expect people to run at the pace that you're going to run at, because leaders themselves will be different to everyone else in their organization. There'll be different paces. But you can structure for speed. You can find the frameworks and the processes which support people and help them get where you want them to be. But there's ultimately, I think, good leaders, there's a real balance between the fact they need to be both responsive. So you have to be courageous enough, brave enough, audacious enough to move fast, to dare and make things happen. But as well as being responsive, which is a lot of pressure, you do have to be responsible. So I think good leaders are those who are building a legacy, who aren't just saying, hey, I'm here for a couple of years and I want to get some great results and look good myself. You're thinking about what am I going to give my successor? What is this doing for the planet? What's it doing for the culture of this company? But they have the sense of responsibility to do that. I think that's what a 21st century leader, and the ones that are most impressive, are struggling with the today and tomorrow, the responsive and responsible, but getting that right and setting a pace that is not just exciting and successful, but is sustainable.
I love that. Responsive and responsible. I'm going to soak on that. I'll give you all copyright if I ever do use it again in public, but I actually do. I love that framing, because there are a lot of people who don't see that. And there are so many examples of leaders who are building innovative organizations in the public and private sector, but they, to your point about being responsible, they're responsive and they get that bit, high growth, market cap, or they're able to kind of like get a lot of capacity in a certain space, but the responsible bit tends to be where they drop off. So I love that bit of the balancing. Yes, you can be responsive to manage in an ever-changing 21st century working environment, but that responsible bit is really important. I really like that.
And that comes from, that phrase comes from a Davos discussion a few years ago. And I think that what it also shows is an understanding of the role of business now in society. So one of the reasons I do what I do, and what is driven by a belief that business has this really important role to play, and it can be a force for good, and it should be something that contributes to a more positive world and society, and the smartest leaders should be thinking about that. So I think that's also it was ever thus for some people. There's people like the Quaker founders of Cadbury and whatever who understood the business role in society, but I think it's a topic right now that is really important. You know, where the politicians are struggling to do things, where can business step up? What does that mean?
Yeah.
And that's something where I think brave leadership is particularly challenging.
Thank you for plugging brave leadership in there. I'll work with that. But yeah, I totally agree with you. It's there's a responsibility, I believe, for a lot of leaders to be able to demonstrate what that leadership looks like for others. And being able to have that sense of, I'm not just doing it for myself, I'm going to take responsibility for others is quite powerful. Which I guess leads me to my next question for you. And I'm using that framing of that 21st century leadership. What's the toughest decision you've had to make as a leader?
Oh, gosh. I mean, leadership is all about decision making, and that's ultimately your main responsibility.
Yeah.
Right. And I think there are probably a couple. I think there's, I mean, the toughest decisions are just personal ones as well, because they are deciding to leave an organization.
Yes.
Deciding to sell a company. Those are hard to do, because you can see the parallel lives ahead of you and making that happen. I think that actually none of the decisions that I've had to make have been absolutely overwhelmingly awful, because I try really hard to surround myself with a bit of a personal boardroom, so that when I know there's a decision which isn't clear or easy, there are always two or three people who I would sense check it with, talk it through, whether they're people inside the organization or outside, and then ultimately make that decision myself and know that there's a risk involved in it all. But whether it's firing people, which is one of the most excruciating experiences for me, if that has to be done, or whether it is changing the direction of an organization, if you listen to others and make sure you're doing it based around what the customer needs, what the business needs, and understanding what's happening, and you use a couple of people as a sounding board, people you trust, those decisions become easier, whatever they are.
The firing one has come up. Getting rid of people has been one that's come up quite a bit. And if I can kind of like do a segue with you, if that's okay. One of the reasons why I really have been passionate about inclusive or brave leadership is that I don't think we talk enough about that. I think everybody's like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have growth, and we're going to build a company. We're going to get the social and what have you, and we're going to get the great talent. But no one ever really has a conversation to go, do you know what? To get rid of somebody is a tough decision. It's hard, especially if you know that, for example, that person may not be a good fit for the organization, or it may be beyond them. But then you also know the extenuating circumstances that this person needs this job, or, you know, they might be the only kind of breadwinner, and you've got to kind of like balance that stuff. So I guess as a leader, if I can use that as an example, I'm just curious as the kind of, and I know you talked about the personal board, but I'm curious as a leader, what's the kind of processes or things that you consider when you do have to remove a member of staff and you have to break that news to them? What are the kind of things that are going through your mind when you're considering them?
I think right then this is a really important one for us to talk about, because, you know, for me personally, and also all the leaders who are friends and people I work with, and within the research I've done for my books, it comes up time and time again.
Yeah.
And I think I think it's a really classic example of brave leadership.
Mm.
So there are circumstances, there's a whole chapter in Superfast around this subject, right?
Yeah.
You hiring as fast as you can, but getting it right and firing at the right pace is something that so many people I've spoken to have said. When you say, what were mistakes you made, or what did you get right, and what were the hardest things, people often talk about knowing someone should go and it not happening quickly enough. I've just spoken to a quite a major CEO recently who just said exactly that.
Mm.
You know, when you know, let them go, as a mantra. And then, as you say, doing it so that you can make sure you're doing it in a way which is in line with some integrity and understanding. Yes. Because ultimately, you have to believe that often it's the right thing for that person too. If there's not the fit and it's not working, it's the fairest thing to do.
Yeah.
But if you are a decent person and a nice person and a kind person, to give somebody that kind of news is incredibly hard.
Yes.
So Wim de Jong, who's a senior partner at Allen & Overy, you know, incredibly innovative law firm, I talked to him a lot about this, and he has done it very well in the past, and that he's ended up staying really good friends with the people and in contact with the people that he's fired effectively because he's dealt with it in such a thoughtful way. And been as he talks about being as generous as you can be in that situation. And I think that, you know, I did some great Hogan profiling on myself with a coach a few years ago, with a brilliant person from Manchester Square Partners who did Hogan with me. And it was very clear when I was looking for a new role, the advice was I should not go into somewhere where it would be, I would spend a lot of time firing people, because it was clearly not something I was going to enjoy. But there is a way, and there's a framework of doing it. And this is one of the things where you can learn from other people and get it right. And preparing it carefully, making sure you're behaving in a way which is in line with your own values, but understanding that that's what bravery is. Bravery is knowing. And it's the biggest, like, there's a lot of stories about the poo in the pool. You know, this whole thing, just one turd in the pool, you know, and there's also the, you know, better a hole than an arsehole approach. One toxic person, one person who isn't right, sets a bad example to everybody else, is infectious, you know, have to be. And that, I think, is probably the definition of tough decisions for leaders, and doing it and making sure you don't shy away from it and be courageous about it has got to be one of the most important aspects of leadership. Interesting subject.
By the way, I knew chapter 9, I'm going to tell everybody if you've actually read the book, right? It's chapter 9, Hire Smart and Fire Fast. But I just wanted you to be able to expand on that a bit, because again, you know, as you say, very often there can be a quite glamorized version of what leadership actually looks like. And we know that it's really, obviously you leading your organization, and mine is smaller, but obviously having to work alongside a number of executives and C-suite leaders across different industries, I know it's not an easy task. And to your point, you know, to be able to do that and still maintain a good relationship with people, that's a kind of a work of magic when you're able to do that. I find that interesting, and I love the feedback that you've given around having to navigate and manage that as a tough decision. So
but I also think the point about really understanding what an incredibly small world this is as well. So, you know, there are the anti-role models, whatever the antonym of it is, that I know who fundamentally everybody who's left the organization have ended up doing it through swearing and, you know, feeling bad about it. It's a brand management issue. Because you then have a conversation with someone who says, would you ever work with these people again? You know, I mean, I would, if I'm going into business with anybody at all, I will do my due diligence and ask people I know who are connected about them. And to actually then speak to somebody who has left working with people, and to hear that it's been handled well, you know, is really important. And you just cannot operate in a world now where if you're behaving badly, it always comes back to haunt you, and the opposite of business karma.
100%. So I'm going to take it to another level now, and I'm going to ask you what succession planning looks like for you.
So we're having some conversations about this at the moment, because I am, you know, really thinking about long-term legacy for everything within the marketing society and things we're looking at. So for example, we're actually looking at succession planning around some of our roles on the board. And one of the things we're doing is introducing a bit more governance to make sure that that's thought through, and we're looking at it. It is hard, because I think the risk of succession planning is always that you end up making the same mistakes one makes when one hires, which is the danger of saying the next person that comes into my role should be able to do all the things I can do, and should therefore look like me and be like me. So I think it comes back to this point about structures and frameworks and processes, which is actually one of the most important things you can do as a leader in terms of succession planning, is build up the framework around your role.
Yes.
So that even if the right person isn't brought in, or if they have challenges, they're supported by the right people. The principles, the values of the organization, the code that's been set up allows much more consistency of approach, but without absolutely controlling it. So I really like the idea of frameworks and then freedom generally. Yes. So if there is a structure and a framework and an expectation and support, while allowing people to be themselves, that makes it much more likely that succession planning leads to something that's still very, very special. If you look at the things like, I was looking at the, Matthew Syed has been at a couple of events with me recently, and we were talking about the whole Satya Nadella versus Bill Gates side of it all.
Yeah.
You know, different personalities, different ways of approaching things. It's very important that leaders are able to be themselves and do things in their own way. But how do you set it up to enable them to succeed as quickly as possible? There's got to be some structure and frameworks to help.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. It's. And I guess the reason why I ask that is sometimes when I'm speaking to leaders, they are fearful of what a succession plan looks like, because they are worried, oh my God, can somebody come up here and be better than me at my job? And I'm always of the opinion that if you're a really good leader, you'll never be afraid of that person. You'll be able to build it up. And as you said, what's the framework or what's the system that you're building so people can succeed in those spaces? And sometimes succession planning might be building really good talent that might leave the company, that might not necessarily be there as well. So I love that whole stuff around the framework. So obviously, you know that I'm really passionate about inclusive leadership, and that my angle or my definition around inclusive leadership is that I want leaders to either create systems and processes for the organization and for talent that doesn't marginalize them, that doesn't make them feel excluded. And I'm quite curious as to what your take on that is. What do you think around the reality of leaders being able to create a mindset or system that reduces the marginalization or exclusion, whether that's around product development, marketing, finance, customer service, and talent? I'm really curious as to your take on that. And by the way, I think I know what the answer is anyway, but I'm just curious as to I'm curious as to what your take on it and how feasible you actually think it really is.
I think it's totally feasible. I think it's totally critical. I think it's complex would be the short answer to it all. It's so important. It's so important that this is built into every discussion everybody's having at the moment, because you can argue it. I mean, we've had a discussion about this. You can absolutely argue it, and you should. I think you should continue to argue about it from a rational business imperative. You know, the importance of cognitive diversity, the importance, the way in which that fosters creativity, the way it makes a workplace that people want to work in. And you know, we spend 90,000 hours of our lives at work, so to be in a place which we can love. All those logical reasons why this should be part of cultural thinking, organization thinking, but also part of product development and everything else that's going on. Absolutely. There's just a strategic imperative and a business imperative there. And of course, there's a doing the right thing imperative. You know, do we go back to the legacy idea, the leadership responsibility. It's a better world. And it's a better world when it's representative. When you talk about marketing specifically, when you talk about anything else, it is fundamentally better. But I think the interesting conversations that are going on at the moment, and which you're leading and provoking as well, are how do you do that with the best will in the world? Again, people will be fallible. They'll get things wrong. They'll try something thinking it's the right thing and it may not work, because it's a relatively new conversation for businesses. So I think there needs to be a shared conversation that goes on. I think we need to be leaning forwards to support those people who are trying, and to share stories about what might work and what might not work. So I really like it when I see collaboration and different competitive organizations coming together to share what's right in here. We do everything we possibly can within the Marketing Society to share examples to inspire others of how people have tried to get this right and what's going on. But I think it's actually a massive seismic shift at the moment that's going on. And it's only starting. So I think we've just done our Marketing Society Awards. We gave the judges wanted to give a special contribution to the marketing industry award to Wavemaker and VCCP and Nationwide, who've actually looked at how to get rid of bias and look at inclusion when it comes to media buying. Just a whole different area. But then I think there's the personal leadership inclusion story, which is sometimes it's about systems and structures, but sometimes I think the most important thing is what can we be doing on a day-by-day basis to try and encourage the voices to allow everybody to feel they can speak up. So we've just introduced, the first time in the Marketing Society, our pulse, our team happiness pulse. We've got a number of questions in there. And one of the most important things for me is there's a question in there which says something like, do I feel comfortable with expressing my opinion and my voice? Is the first question. And the second one is, do I feel that my voice counts? And I think the fundamental layer of psychological safety and working as a leader to build that up within a team starts making everything else much, much more likely in terms of inclusion and belonging. And it starts with that.
Yeah. Thank you. It's good to hear. It's good. No, I love it. It's good because I know that, and again, in all honesty, I know that we have had some conversations around it, and it's just, it's nice to... It's not nice. It's great. Nice is such a soft word. It's great to hear you articulate it. And because, again, the big picture for me is getting individuals to understand this. There are so many different touch points. Whenever I talk about it, talent comes last. I focus on all those other processes. Why? Because I always recognize that the resistance starts when I put talent first. It's not that talent isn't important, but when I have it in the list of priorities, people go, oh yeah, customer service and product development. And again, as you're saying, supply chain and media buying. And people go, I didn't even really think about that. And then we go, okay, and once that's in your DNA and it's in your practice, that should also apply to talent. So it's really refreshing to hear both of the awards that were given and the initiatives that are being made so people understand this is new. This isn't something that we're going to hit and solve immediately, but there is a really good intention. There needs to be, and we've had this conversation before, there needs to be patience because it's not going to turn around overnight, and a real sense of understanding. So I really appreciate that. But I was going to bring you down to my last. Go on. You're going to say, go on.
Yeah,
go on.
No, because I just want to add, we could talk for hours just on this question as well. I think the other interesting conversation that's going on in the marketing industry and the profession at the moment, and I think conversation, we talk about leading the conversation. Our members tend to be those ones who are leading conversations. And I think conversation is a good word because it's not, nobody has the answers, but by talking about it, we're uncovering it all. But one of the really interesting things that's going on is from an inclusion point of view, rather than it being a quotas question, one of the big initiatives that we're supporting is changing the shape of how people come into the marketing industry by supporting apprenticeships. So the School of Marketing, who we support, have a big apprenticeship program and are doing Gen Z mentoring as part of that. But that is one example of things that we need to try and do, which from a patient's point of view will take time because it's actually changing the habits. But the marketing advertising industry is not socially diverse in any way. So how do we change that? And that's probably investing in tomorrow and exploring areas around that, which I think are going to be really, really important for long-term change.
100%. And I love, again, you mentioned it earlier, but I love being in the position or the platform that I have to provoke, and in a good way, but to provoke some real honest conversation around it, because I realize that very often, to your point, very often there are people who are afraid of having the conversation because they're afraid of saying the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And to be in a space where we can go, right, I talk to individuals like yourself and others who are in there. Well, these are some of the things that we've done. Somebody goes, oh, well, it's actually, change is going to be a challenge, but it doesn't have to be the end of the world. There are things that we can do with it. So that's important. So let me come down to my last two questions. I'm being very respectful of your time here. Is if I was to ask those who you lead, and I was asked them to say to me, what does Sophie do well? And then what can she improve on?
Oh, that's painful.
Oh, my goodness. You must be so glad this is not going out on video, right? But both hands went on the face. But if they said you could do well and what you can improve on, and without beating yourself up, I just think it's good because it's part of the vulnerability around leadership. What would you think they would say?
No, and it is absolutely part of vulnerability. And it's also part of one of the frameworks that we are working on as a team within the society as well. We always look at what works well, even better if. With one of our principles, absolutely being everything can be better always, and that comes to people as well. So my team have been lovely. When I celebrated an anniversary with them of being with it all, they gave me, you know, positive feedback and words to be associated with it. So let's do the three for both. Let me think about this as I speak. Three things I think I do well. When I get it right, I think that the energy to believe that things can be different is, and the optimism side of it all. So there's definitely a need in any organization for someone to be able to just believe and lead that belief. And I absolutely believe that what we are doing to change and help is really positive. So to championing that, I think I do well. A sense of experimentation and willingness for us to try things. And I'm really, really working hard to make sure we have three core values as a team, share, care, and dare. And the daring, encouraging people to do that. So I hope that they would say I would support them in daring and, you know, and not shouting at them for failure. You know, a learn fast culture requires experimentation. So I guess energy, experimentation, and I hope a sense of fun. So I do think that work can be a feel-good place. I think it's really hard, our work, and people do work very hard. But I would like to hope that they see me as somebody who champions a sense of positivity and purpose around what we do. So those are the positive things. The even better if would probably be, first of all, it is when you are trying to do a million and one things, which is what I want to do right now, both in my life and at work, that does mean that I'm not a finisher. So I'm a start, and it's a personality trait, but it's also particularly right now. So I'll start something off. So the frustration will always be people want more time with me, members, team members, everybody else is possible. And I'm more likely to start a lot of things than finish them off. So that would be number one. Secondly, I think that although I push pace and I want us to move fast because of the way in which we're working, I don't think at the moment we have enough process that speeds things up. And so sometimes our pace of things can be slower than we all want. So one of our big changes we're making at the moment is working out how can we set in place those structures and those processes which speed things up and let things go. And lastly, you know, I think because I know that editing as a leader is one of the key priorities, I do think we're trying to prioritize what we do and cut things down. But because we're so ambitious, there's so much going on, it's very easy for everybody to feel like we've got a million and one balls juggling. So actually, sometimes the team don't believe that we can do all that we can do. And we do always end up doing it. But, you know, I don't make things easy.
Yeah.
Because we are ambitious.
And that's fine. You know, it gave me so much joy to see you do that. On a personal level.
Well, you're so challenging, Dave.
I'm going to give you some unsolicited advice. And I'm going to do it because you know that I'm going to do it anyway. Knowing what I know about you, and knowing in the short term that I've known you, I'm going to suggest that I'm going to keep on putting it in your mind subliminally that it's not that you think that about these things, it's that you know what you do well. It's not that you think that you know that you do it well. But that's another conversation for another time. I'm not your coach, all right? I'm your friend. So let me stay in my lane and behave myself. Okay, so the last one, the last question, just to round this all out, is more around your leadership approach. And I'm quite curious, is your approach shaped by the company that you're in now, in the Marketing Society, or is it just shaped by the principles you have full stop?
Absolutely, principles I have full stop. So, of course, you know, one of the most important things with the Marketing Society, I need to understand the heritage. We're a 62-year-old organisation. There are lots of people who really care about us as a brand and an organisation, so I'm respectful of that. Mm-hmm. But I have spent, and I continue to spend, a lot of time talking to leaders, understanding business, reading, thinking about what leadership and business should look like. Mm-hmm. So therefore, actually what I'm doing at the moment is trying out some of my hypotheses, exploring things, learning as I go. So therefore, I think a lot of those principles will have been founded in my first role. Procter & Gamble was very influential, and seeing what people have done, but also the writing I've done and thinking about it is shaping what we're doing within the society. With the help of our board and our team, who are also shaping where we go there. So it absolutely is not, this is not the Sophie Devonshire Show at the Marketing Society. We've got a lot of people involved in how we're leading and changing what we do. Yeah. But it's my principles that I am working on and thinking about and continue to believe. I want to test them out. One of the reasons I want to be successful is I want to prove that you absolutely can be a decent human being and be commercially successful, that you can lead a business with authority and clarity without being a jerk. It's really, really important for me to believe that we can build a workplace where people can be themselves, can enjoy it, can grow and flourish, and the business can still be successful.
Fabulous. Thank you. Appreciate you. Always.
Appreciate you, agent provocateur and challenger. Indeed. Supporter and challenger.
Indeed. No, you know that. You know I will rally and champion you. I'm going to make sure in the show notes that I leave a link both for Superfast and so that you can see right here on my bookshelf beside me.
Enough work. Brilliant. Thank you.
So I'll definitely make sure that's in the show notes. So I really appreciate you. Thank you for your time, Sophie. And again, as I said, I look forward to the feedback from my listeners as to what they've learned from this as well. I appreciate you as always.
Fantastic. Thank you for asking me to talk to you today.
The David McQueen Podcast is a Q Talent Management production. Theme music is Biscuit by Lacrimbo.